Welcome to the August 2014 installment of Industrio Heating's Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcast, underwritten by Solar Manufacturing, leaders in the design and manufacture of high-technology vacuum furnaces for a wide variety of thermal processes. Solar Manufacturing, the brightest solutions through ingenuity, on the web at solarmfg.com. Preventative maintenance of vacuum furnaces is this month's topic, and joining our regular podcast voices, those of host Jim Nagy, president of Solar Manufacturing, and regular guest Bill Jones, CEO of Solar Manufacturing and Solar Atmospheres, is Nick Cordisco, service manager and electrical engineer for Solar Manufacturing. This is part one of a two-part series on preventative maintenance, and here is Jim Nagy to get us started.
Before we jump into our first question regarding our topic, the importance of vacuum furnace maintenance, I wanted to set up our discussion for our listeners to get everyone on the same page. When we talk about maintenance in a heat treat shop, we are generally speaking about preventive maintenance, as opposed to a more reactive or run-to-failure program. Today, we're here to discuss the importance of maintenance and how to keep a vacuum heat treat furnace operating at full capacity. There are many reasons for instituting a PM program, so let's just briefly review the benefits. Bill, what would you say are the important benefits of a preventive maintenance program for a vacuum furnace?
We want our furnaces to run 24 hours, 7 days a week. That probably is the most important criteria of a maintenance program, so that we don't have surprises and downtime. So I can't emphasize enough, our vacuum furnaces are just like airplanes. We want to keep them in the air and flying. Now, the other thing to look at for maintenance is to avoid unscheduled downtime. 2 o'clock, say, on a Sunday morning where you're running a 7 day week is not a time to have downtime. We don't have our regular maintenance people in. And so what usually ends up, if it isn't something very simple that can be answered with a phone call, we end up with equipment down. Maybe even an in-process cycle that's down that causes non-conformance reports and all sorts of issues. So unscheduled downtime is something we want to avoid. One way to do that is with a preventative maintenance program. The unscheduled downtime often involves manpower that we have to bring in on overtime, or we have to bring in outside services. So that's another downside of maintenance that we want to avoid. The other thing to keep in mind with any kind of a piece of equipment, and a vacuum furnace particularly, because they're an expensive piece of equipment. They're being depreciated at fairly high rates, and a furnace that is not running is costing money in spite of the fact of the loss of operations. Not only are you losing the downtime from depreciation costs, but you're losing the revenue generated by that furnace. And that revenue can be very significant and is very costly to company operations. One of the objectives is to reduce operating expenses. And you can do that through a good maintenance program, some of which we will discuss today.
Nick, from your perspective as a service manager, what would you add to Bill's comments about the benefits of a preventive maintenance program?
Bill, you are absolutely correct on all points. I would also like to add that it is essential to keep accurate records of all maintenance activities for each furnace, not just to track the intervals between activities, but also to help diagnose and troubleshoot when they occur. Bottom line is the more time you take to properly maintain your furnace, in turn will keep it running at peak performance. And that equates to a satisfied customer and ultimately making money because you are able to produce a quality product in a timely manner.
Good. Well, let's review the different critical areas of a vacuum furnace that need to be maintained. Bill, can you comment on the hot zone?
One of the highest areas of critical maintenance is the hot zone of the vacuum furnace itself. Before commenting on maintenance, we also should speak about the type of work that we're putting into the furnace. You cannot put oily or wet work into the furnace and expect good results. Over time, the result of that will be a deterioration of the hot zone, particularly oily work. Wet work ends up as another problem. The main point here is that we want work that is absolutely oil-free and solvent-free going into the furnace. The other area is you don't want work that may be contaminated with something like a ceramic from a casting operation, or dirt from blasting, or welding byproducts. All those things are no-nos and can cause trouble. A good idea or a good recommendation is to allow the operators, or have the operators, do a regular clean out of any accumulated dirt by blowing it out, by blowing the furnace with an air hose. That may not be permissible in your operation, but certainly you could vacuum the hot zone. One of the areas that causes the most trouble in a vacuum furnace are the heating elements themselves and or the ceramic electrical insulators that isolate the heating elements from the furnace hot zone. Insulators are one of the major causes of heating element failures, be they graphite or metal like molybdenum. Some furnaces are built with ground detectors so that we can find ground faults in the heating elements, which result generally in finding broken insulators or contaminated insulators. The other way to do this is with the hot zone de-energized, to measure the resistance of the heating elements to ground with a standard volt-ohm meter. That resistance preferably would be above 10 ohms to ground. Resistance readings of lower than 10 ohms begins to raise suspicions that there could be a problem. Resistance readings of less than 1 ohm to ground will be a problem. A broken or cracked heating element will lead to a hot spot or possibly no operation at all in that particular heating element bank. So looking over the hot zone with a good strong light and looking at the heating elements and seeing that they're all intact and free from any of that type of problems is something that should be looked at on a regular basis. Often the operators can do this, or possibly it should be looked at weekly by maintenance people, but they should be looked at and not just run indiscriminately. Arcing or loose connections in a furnace, particularly the heating elements, can really result in very serious damage in the furnace. And or arcing, which can result in contamination of graphite or moly being arced to a very expensive product. So any loose connections in the heating elements is to be avoided. Another area in the hot zone are the gas nozzles. Cooling in a vacuum furnace is very often with gas nozzles. Sometimes it could be different. But where you have nozzles, which is very predominant in the industry, the nozzles should be tight, they should not be loose, and they should not be contaminated, particularly with vapors of condensation like nickel or chrome, which will eventually either clog the nozzle or severely affect its operation. Nozzles like that should be removed from the hot zone and replaced. It may even be necessary to pull the entire hot zone apart to fix those kinds of problems. We've not discussed particularly the thermocouples of the furnace. Most of the control and over-temperature thermocouples are platinum, and they are within ceramic protection tubes, and they are long life. The recommended life of these thermocouples is 1 year. However, it's a good idea to occasionally check to see that the ceramic is intact and it's not loose or broken. That could lead to leakage from air from outside of the furnace. The position of the thermocouples should be as the furnace was approved for temperature uniformity survey and not changed in operation, but return to the original temperature uniformity survey positions. The work thermocouples, that is, thermocouples that are connected directly into the jack panel of the vacuum furnace and then insert it into the workload to track the actual work temperature are very important considerations. These thermocouples have finite life. They may only run a few days, a few cycles, sometimes much better, all depending on the type of thermocouple that you use. Generally, they are type K. They could be either a stainless steel sheath, Inconel sheath, or possibly insulated with Refacil. The Refacil thermocouples are very subject to deterioration. Any of these thermocouples will tend to fail operating at high temperatures in a relatively short period of time, and the failure mode is really a reduced temperature indications. So particularly at operating temperatures over 1800 degrees Fahrenheit, thermocouples should be replaced on a regular basis. Operating at temperatures, for example, over 2200 degrees Fahrenheit may only be operation satisfactorily for one or two runs. And of course, an Inconel sheath thermocouple is superior to Refacil, and the heavier gauge wire in any of these thermocouples is desirable. Normally, the work thermocouple gauge wire is 18 gauge or heavier. For better life, even heavier gauge, such as a 14 gauge wire, could be a consideration.
Nick, I understand that performing regular bakeout cycles is important. Can you give us your thoughts?
Yes, Jim, you are correct. You want to perform regular bakeouts. And when I say regular, I think that will be dictated on your operation, whether or not you're running a 24/7 operation or just 8-hour days, 5 days a week. So that's going to dictate how often you need to run a bakeout. But before you run the bakeout, you need to make sure that you have a leak-tight furnace. And the reasons are is you don't want to run a furnace up to maximum temperature with a high leak rate because you could do damage and possibly ruin your hot zone. There's a rule of thumb that we try to use when determining if you can run a bakeout, and that would be to run a pump down and preliminary leak up rate test. And we would like to use a recommendation of 25 microns per hour. And we would also recommend that you do this at least on a weekly basis to try to track this data and determine whether or not you have a growing problem. After you're done performing the bakeout cycle, I think you would like to immediately perform a leak rate after your bakeout because the furnace is clean, dry, and empty in optimal conditions. And then you should also track this information as well because then you can have accurate records for, like I said, down the line if you need to diagnose problems. When you're ready to run a bakeout, you need to make sure that you do some preliminary checks. One is to check the condition of the door O-ring. You want to make sure that it's clean, dry, and doesn't contain any cracks or gouges or any flat areas. You also should wipe it down with a lint-free cloth. And it is important that you supply a light coating of vacuum grease on the O-ring so it can create a vacuum seal. You also want to make sure that the mating flanges are also in good condition. Sometimes this would require just wiping down with a lint-free cloth and maybe some alcohol to clean it up. But sometimes it might require other interactions by sometimes needing to lightly sand down the flanges because there could be some rust or dirt buildup. And it's also important to clean these flanges and sometimes even the dovetail groove in order to make sure that they are sealing properly. Lastly, it would also be important to keep records of when you're replacing the door O-ring because you're going to periodically need to replace the O-ring based on its condition. Our recommendation would be to replace the O-ring quarterly.
Well, in the future, we're planning a podcast where we will unpack the special needs of water cooling systems in greater detail. So I hope our listeners look for that announcement in months ahead. But water cooling systems are very critical to the operation of a vacuum furnace, and they have their own particular maintenance needs. So, Bill, can you give us your recommendations for water cooling systems?
There's a book one could write about water cooling systems. As a matter of fact, we have written a booklet, and Jim will cover that in his closing moments. Probably the most important thing one might consider is the color or the turbidity of the water. If the water exiting the furnace, those lines, if they are relatively clear, clean, that is with a turbidity of less than about 20 units, then your water system is probably in fairly good condition. However, dirty water that is contaminated with rust and or minerals coming from the furnace is just an indication of future problems. The other area, particularly with an older vacuum furnace, is the condition of the water cooling hoses in the furnace. These hoses, over time, will become brittle, cracked, and break. And a good rule of thumb is to completely rehose the entire furnace every 5 years to avoid having failures in the middle of the night. There are other considerations about cooling water, such as the type of water that we're running through the furnace, whether we are using aerated cooling towers, and in just a quick moment, aerated water running through the furnace is just an opportunity for a problem. So open site towers are going to lead to issues down the road. So we will discuss these issues in much greater detail concerning the water treatment issues and quality and things to stay away from.
Well, this has been a good start on our discussion of preventive maintenance, and I'd like to continue our discussion in our next podcast. And we will look at the maintenance of vacuum pumping systems and power supplies next time. For our listeners' reference, we have an article on our website that you can download about preventive maintenance, written by Rial Ferdet and Bill Jones. We also have many reference booklets that would be helpful. Bill mentioned one on water cooling systems. These are all on our website and can be downloaded. We'd also like to recommend to our listeners Dan Herring's book, Vacuum Heat Treating, available from the Industrial Heating website. It's a very good book, and we highly recommend it for any vacuum furnace user.
Thanks for listening, and plan on listening in October for Part 2 of Industrial Heating's Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcast, the final installment dealing with preventative maintenance of vacuum furnaces. Solar Manufacturing brings you this helpful information. Solar would like to work with you on your next vacuum furnace project. That includes new furnace design, construction and installation, rebuilding hot zones, or rebuilding entire furnace systems. Trust Solar Manufacturing, the brightest solutions through ingenuity. On the web at solarmfg.com. Thanks for listening.